Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is the Seahawkers podcast with Brandon Schultz and Adam Emmert. And this week on the show, we are honored to welcome Seattle Seahawks long snapper Nate Boyer to the show. Even before he joined the team, we talked about Nate. He volunteered in Africa with the Catholic Relief Services and Child Fund. He's a former Green Beret. He walked on at the University of Texas and became their long snapper while continuing to serve in the Army Reserves. And he's now a member of the Seattle Seahawks. We welcome Nate Boyer to the show. How's it going, Nate?
Pretty good. How you doing?
I am well. And, before we get started, I think it's really important to kind of share our thoughts and prayers with the family of the four Marines killed in Chattanooga today. And I saw on Twitter that you were actually born in Tennessee, grew up in the Bay Area. How did seeing that impact you today?
I guess it wouldn't really matter where it was in the States, just the fact that it happened and stuff like that seems to keep happening around the country, whether that's, you know, with the military or not. It's just frustrating more than anything. There's nothing really, that's kind of what I said on the post is, you can send your condolences and all that, but there's nothing you can really do to comfort them right now. Those families, I can't even imagine, you spend your time overseas fighting, and I've lost buddies back here stateside as well. And it just doesn't seem to make sense. You go over there and you're in the midst of all the war, and you survive that and you come back here and something like that happens. It's just devastating.
Well, I think that's, for those of us that are former military, and it's because there is a sense of security when you come back home. You feel like you're so much safer that you're out of that war zone mentality. And I think that, like you said, that is frustrating that when you get back, you still have to, it almost feels as like you don't have that break that maybe you thought you did. It's just a really big reminder for those of us that going out in uniform that you can still be that same kind of target that you would be overseas. And that's a scary thing.
Yeah, definitely. The whole point of us going overseas is to defend that and fight for, that security over here. And when it doesn't seem to be as prevalent as at least it should be, or, obviously it's not 100%, it's just annoying more than anything. And obviously very sad for the families that are affected.
Well, our thoughts and prayers certainly go out to them. Now, I want to go back a little bit because, you were in the Army, and I mentioned, in your introduction, we talked about this even before the draft. You have such an amazing story, and you've carried over, with your new chapter in the NFL to also being a part of a veterans organization like 22 Kill, which I want to talk about too. But take me back to leading up to the NFL draft. You're just finishing school at University of Texas. You have this career where you've walked on and been a really successful with the team and aspirations for the NFL, and you get that call from the Seattle Seahawks. What was that moment like?
It was pretty awesome. It's kind of hard to describe something like that because it was just, I don't want to say it was like a surreal moment or, this like fantasy dream thing. Cause it wasn't anything like that. It was awesome. Like I said, and it was just a, I'm very humbled and excited to get that call. And, I'm not an idiot. I know that, I wasn't a top prospect on anybody's list, probably even at that position of long snapper, but I know that, my dedication and hard work and, and story had a lot to do with that decision to give me an opportunity. And, I was just glad that it was a team like Seattle, with a place where they don't really need, I don't think they really need leadership or someone like me to come in. So it wasn't like one of those things where I felt like they just wanted a voice in the locker room or, a good PR stunt for the team and all that. The whole Seahawk mentality is just this competition, constant competition, and Coach Carroll, preaches that all the time. And so it was neat to be invited by them and signed by them, because I felt that it was, they were looking for a guy that was going to, contribute on the field, not just, be a story. And so I'm just thankful for the opportunity to compete it's awesome.
Well, and one of the things that we've really seen, as a Seahawks fan watching this team over the years, Coach Carroll has shown that he is going to start the guy who gives the team the best chance to win. And so having that opportunity, looking ahead with training camp right around the corner, how do you approach that competition with Clint Gresham?
I'm not worried about, anybody else but me. It'd be stupid to be like that. Obviously, the guy's good. He's good. When he was coming out of college, he was a totally different prospect than I was. He got invited to the combine, and he was like the number one snapper coming out that year. And he's 6'3", 250 pounds. All the stuff they're looking for at that position. And he's a great snapper. So I'm a little different. I'm not. When I played in college, I was 5'11", 190 pounds, mm-hmm. and I've put on almost 40 pounds now.
Oh, wow.
In the offseason, over the spring here, just so the NFL teams would give me a shot, I think I'm still just about I'm on the light end still for a snapper, but that's just the nature of the beast. It's a big, fast league with elite athletes, and all I can control is what I do and how hard I work. And just do my best. I know that sounds cliche and kind of like a youth sports sort of attitude, but that's really all I can do. When I think about the word competition and what it means for me in this situation is just competing with my potential, hopefully just exceeding everyone's expectations, because I know there's a lot of people out there, a lot of analysts and whatnot, that are like, oh, that's really sweet of the Seahawks to sign that kid. He doesn't have a shot in hell to make it in the league, but good for them and that organization.
Let's talk about that, Nate, because to me, from my perspective, I look at your past and I see the tremendous odds that you've overcome at numerous points in your life. I'm sure that, before you even considered becoming a Green Beret, you were told how unlikely it would be to make it. The odds were against you there, and having no prior football experience and walking on at Texas, and you made the roster on a Division I college football team. And then you have people saying now that you're too old or you're too small to be signed by an NFL team. Well, you're now a member of the Seattle Seahawks. So now, after accomplishing all those milestones in your life, overcoming the odds that you have so far, does it upset you at this point, or do you laugh it off when people doubt you that you could be snapping the ball in a regular season NFL game in just a couple months?
Yeah, I probably laugh it off more than anything, because honestly, it's usually the people that haven't done a damn thing with their lives that are the ones saying that stuff. Or maybe they've done something, but it's not something great. Anything great is usually very difficult. that's just how it is. And there's a lot of people out there that I mean, I think everybody has a dream or something they wish they could do or wish they would have done. And I don't ever want to be that person. And, you know, typically I think in life, those are the people you'll find that will try to shoot down your dreams or, you know, tell you that you can't do something or it's not possible or, you know, just because maybe it hasn't been done before or hasn't been done in that way. So, yeah, I kind of like that stuff, honestly. It just motivates me. You know, you can take that two ways. You can let it bother you and get upset about it, you know, but, I just shrug it off and actually invite it at some level because, it just, you know, it makes me, turn around and walk back in the weight room or whatever, when I'm thinking I may be done if I read something like that.
And that said, do you have a plan, if it doesn't happen, or have you even allowed yourself to think about that?
Oh yeah, no, I've got so much stuff I still want to do and will do with my life, whether I play in the NFL or not. So it's not, I don't see it at this point as a failure, you know. It's just, it would be amazing. It would be great. I would love the opportunity to continue to play football, and especially at the top level. That's like a, you know, childhood dream, but so there's been a lot of things in my life that, I've kind of tried and went after, and they haven't always worked out, you know, but, I just embrace change, and I'm good at accepting the fact that I am not in control of everything. And as long as I give it everything I have, that's all you can really ask for. And then the rest of it's just, you know, up to other forces, whether that's God or fate or whatever you want to call it.
So being a prior service member myself, I think it's really important to talk about some of the other things that you've been doing in this off season, and whether it's your work with Seattle Stand Down or 22 Kill, I want to talk about those and hear what those experiences have meant for you. I know back in May you did some work with Seattle Stand Down. For those who aren't familiar with it, can you talk a little bit about that organization and what they do?
Basically, their aim is to end veteran homelessness in the Seattle area. You know, there's stand downs that occur all over the country, and essentially in certain major cities, they've sort of ended veteran homelessness, at least for those that, you know, seek help. There's always a contingency of people that honestly just don't want the help and would rather be homeless for whatever reason, but. You know, there are people in the Seattle area, and I spent a day with them, about 40 of them, 30 or 40 of them, just a couple weeks ago, that, you know, they're not just looking for handouts, they're just looking for help, you know, and a lot of them, it's taken them a long time to ask for this help, you know. They've tried to do it on their own, and things haven't worked out. A lot of them have, you know, physical and mental scars and issues. And, you know, it's kind of a tough one for me because I've always, not always, but I've, a lot of times I'm under the impression that, you know, people that are homeless are just lazy sometimes. And it's just, you know, there's no reason they can't make something happen if they're really that determined. But, you know, everybody's different. And I'm trying to be a little more accepting of that. And everyone's situation is different. And I don't always know everything, you know, what's going on with every person. I mean, nobody does. So, what's cool about these guys was they were telling their stories and we sat around and just talked. And, you know, once you hear their stories and kind of how they wound up where they're at, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's not, a lot of these guys, it's not a choice. You know, they don't choose to live like that. They're having trouble finding work and, you know, a lot of them are a little bit older and they have families and kids that they're trying to help support too, and they just can't afford to, you know, to put themselves in a home right now. And so, there's a lot of people with that organization, and I'm sure countless others, that do a lot more than I do. You know, I haven't really done that much, and I plan on doing more in the future. A lot of it's time issues and whatnot, but there's guys that and gals that dedicate every day to trying to fix it up for that problem and many other veteran issues. And, you know, those guys, those people honestly deserve a lot more recognition than I do for causes like that. But I'm just glad that I can talk about it and help spread the word.
Well, and I know that, you know, if I feel like when I see people out there doing something and bringing, shining a spotlight on certain issues, it definitely motivates me to do something with those organizations as well. And, you know, 22 Kill is another one of those organizations that that you're heavily involved with. And when I think about, you know, the name of the organization, you know, 22 veterans a day committing suicide is a gut-wrenching number. And it goes back to just what we were talking about earlier. When you get outside of a war zone and you get back home, then you kind of, I think even among family members, they must think that, you know, here is a safer place. But when veterans come back home, there's problems. And talk about your work with 22 Kill and that and what you're doing with them.
You know, well, that organization was started by a former Marine who came back to the States, and you know, he was having a lot of issues with kind of reintegrating to life back here. And you know, he'd seen a lot and been around a lot, and he'd lost friends. You know, and he started kind of going the wrong way. You know, the VA was, you know, prescribing him a lot of medication, and he was taking it. And it wasn't helping the problem. You know, some people do need that kind of medication and help, but I think there's a lot of people who really don't. And in my opinion, I think a lot of people are just, you know, misprescribed and over-medicated. And in those situations, you know, it's like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. You know, you're masking the problem and you're just numbing it for a period of time. Instead of dealing with fixing it and moving on with your life and growing from it, you know. And so one of the phrases that they like to use and I like to use is called, you know, post-traumatic growth. And so there, what 22 Kill does is, you know, encourages, you know, finding a purpose and fixing those issues by living your life, not by, you know, letting what has happened and what you've seen and been a part of, you know, sort of bring you down and get you in this rut back here in the States where you feel like nothing you'll ever do will ever be as important as what you did over there. And, you know, and maybe it won't, but there's a lot to be done, with the rest of your life. And you can find purpose, you know, in anything really, you know, and it starts with finding a passion. And I think that's what at least I've tried to do somewhat with my life, you know, since I've been out and even while I was in. And so, yeah, they encourage, you know, veteran entrepreneurship and things like that. And they assist in those type of endeavors. And also it's just, you know, service, continued service, you know, throughout your life. There's so many organizations to get involved with. And right at your community level, you know, but it just takes, sometimes it takes getting, you know, a little kick in the pants. But more than anything, you know, it's good to have a support system and people that you can talk to and fall back on. And yeah, there's a lot of veterans out there that are doing some amazing things, and every single one of us is capable of it. It's just a matter of making that decision, to want to improve your life and people's lives around you. Or just let, you know, the life sort of dominate you. And that's not the way I want to live. I mean, I don't think that's the way anybody really wants to live.
Well, we have a lot of current and prior service members, Nate, with the Military Seahawkers organization who are reaching out to me oftentimes and asking ways that they can help in the community. And for even for people who aren't affiliated with the military, how could they get involved with your organization?
Well, honestly, and I won't even say this for just 22 Kill or for Seattle Stand Down, I'll say it for any veteran organization. The information is out there. You know what I mean? While donating money is always needed and great, I think the most valuable thing is your time and, you know, caring. It's just like a child. You know, sometimes you have to listen even when you don't want to. And you have to pretend to be interested, and you have to make an effort to care, and that's the same way, you know, with this. If you want to really improve, you know, a veteran's life, or a group of veterans' lives, you need to act. You need to do something. You need to get, I mean, there's, the internet is full of information. There's every community at any size town, you know, there is something that you can do. There's something you can do to help, and there's some organization, and they always need volunteers, and they always need help. And, but it's going to, you know, it takes doing some research. I mean, that's just how, that's the same way when I went to go volunteer in the Darfur way back when. I found out quickly that it wasn't just, people weren't just like, you know, looking for volunteers off the street to go over there and help people. You have to like make it happen. But once you, you know, get your head in there and get down on your hands and knees, get dirty and get to work, there's a lot to be done and people really appreciate the effort. And, so it's the same way with any of this stuff. I mean, you can find it online. And the, I think that my personally, you know, the best way to get involved is to do it in some way that is also something that interests you. Like for instance, in Dallas, there's an organization called EQuest. My dad's a racehorse veterinarian. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of, you know, I'm familiar with the horse stuff, and this EQuest place, they do horse therapy, for veterans. And it's amazing the work that they do and the strides that they make with these guys and gals. Because a lot of them, you know, a lot of veterans come back and they have issues with, just communicating with people, you know, and getting in touch with their emotions and just being a normal person. And so that's just one example. You know, if somebody, if you had an interest in working with horses or something, you thought that was something you wanted to do or whatever, I mean, why not do that? Because then it's something that you're passionate about. And you're also helping, you know, veterans if you really wanted to help veterans. So that's just an example. I mean, there's a million of them, but.
No, I think that's a great point that you make to be sure that you find, you know, not only something that you can feel like you're making a difference, but also something that you're passionate about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, everyone would like to say, yeah, you know, I wish I could, you know, I could go work at a soup kitchen once a week. I want to do something like that. But if they're, you know, if you're not passionate about food or something like that, that might be something that's not the best fit for you to actually, you know, for those people that are, you know, benefiting from your volunteer work or your service. You know, you want to do something, you want to be involved with something that, that you're moved by so that you can, you know, help reach them and actually make that connection. You know, if you're into sports, you know, I would definitely do something sports related. I mean, it's just that, you know, there's a million different opportunities out there. You just got to do some research, but I guarantee you'll find it.
Well, Nate, I really want to thank you for your time and for coming on our show, and best of luck to you with the training camp coming up, man.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. We'll see what happens. It'll be a good time either way. I'm excited. You know, just for the shot that I'm getting. So,
oh, we will be watching, and I do hope you get to make that trip out the tunnel, that stadium full of fans. It will be an awesome experience.
All right, Brent, I appreciate that.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.